The Shaq Show is a production of iHeartRadio. Today on The Shaq Show, I'm going to talk to Bob Herrig of ESPN.com, Major League Tiger Watcher, expert on all things Tiger, about Tiger's return to golf after 5 months off. Last time we saw him was the Genesis Open. The Genesis Invitational. Oh, at least I didn't call it the LA Open. And more importantly, I'm going to talk about that Zany Memorial Tournament first. Wow, unbelievable day at Muirfield Village on Sunday. If you were out enjoying beautiful weather, I don't blame you, but it ended up being kind of a surreal final round after a surreal week in which it started with Jack Nicklaus basically scolding the governing bodies of golf on live television. Thought that was a nice touch. Love it when he gets cranky. Then he proceeds to present Muirfield Village like a U.S. Open, which unfortunately kind of undercuts his message because people see a setup like this week with high rough and greens that were essentially allowed to die because they were going to be ripped up after the tournament. Turns out they were ripped up during the tournament, during the final round. Not a great look, but we'll get to that in a minute. But I do think he the U.S. Open setup idea undercuts the concept of saying, hey, the skill issue and the distance issue is problematic when the course essentially did hold up well to the best players in the world. Unfortunately, it required things that you can only do when you are about to take the grass out. And even today, they put a lot of water on overnight, and the yellow that was seen on Saturday and the purple and the brown went back to green. And then as the day went, the greens deteriorated again. So anyway, that was how we started the week. And then Jack Nicklaus mentioned that he would shake the hand of the winner. Seemed like an odd statement, given his age and COVID-19, where he resides, a lot of other things. And then he made a comment about how he couldn't pass the virus along. Well, it turned out that mid-telecast, Jack decided to drop another surprise on us and revealed that he and Barbara Nicklaus both had tested positive. He had experienced symptoms, and they had quarantined for about a month. Barbara, thankfully, never got ill. They have tested tested for the antibodies. If that turns out to mean something, I hope it does. Anyhow, Jack is well, and it was quite a zany week. It was wonderful having Jack Nicklaus on the broadcast because he talked about redesigning the golf course and a lot of other things. Then he was there in the booth on Friday when Bryson DeChambeau made 10. Essentially berated the rules officials, mashed down the ground around where he was dropping his ball. Just an awful display. Then the next hole, his caddy essentially speeds up to get in front of a Golf Channel cameraman with an imposing look. I did a blog post about that. Lot of layers there. That issue with Bryson and television and weirdness and rudeness to people who are just doing their job is becoming a real problem for the PGA Tour. And I believe discipline is the only way it can be addressed. He clearly is not getting the point, and it's so disappointing because he's such an interesting character. I know in his heart, having talked to him a little bit, he's incredibly respectful of the game's history and his elders, and I don't get what's happening. It's not a transformation that's attractive to watch, and it's so disappointing because he is such a different character, and we need those people in the game, and he needs to deal with why he is getting so easily upset. He also needs to stop touching around his ball. So let's get to the thing that really does bother me the most. Jon Rahm, wonderful victory, moves to number one in the world, is just been playing so beautifully. He's slowly improving his temper issues. He had one moment on the course during the final round. If you saw, he slammed his driver into the tee on 11 after hitting it into the trees and then subsequently into the creek where he made double bogey. He is a another just class act, wonderful, interesting guy, incredibly bright, great future ahead of him. Of course, he's number one in the world now by the algorithms telling us that. So his future has arrived, and he's somebody I respect immensely. However, like so many players today, he just loves to put the club down behind the ball, just loves to test the lie, test the ground. And I've railed on about this for a long time, and I don't want to belabor the story. For those who've heard of me talk about it on State of the Game with Mike Clayton, who concurs, a former golf pro, you know, when I was young and I would go to pro golf tournaments, I would always play really well the week after because my tempo was better. And my tempo was better because I would watch these players come up to their ball, especially when they hit it a little offline and you got to get really close to them. And they had a funky lie in the hard pan or in the rough, and watch them how gently they would lay the club down and never really do anything to alter what goes on behind the ball, either because they don't want to be seen as improving their lie or because they did not actually want to move the ball. Well, we get to 16 today, and after all week, I mean, I've seen guys, I watched a lot of the Memorial. It was a lot of fun to watch. Golf Channel, CBS, just doing a great job under these difficult circumstances, especially when the cameramen are worried about a player or a caddy coming and beating the crap out of them. And sure enough, John puts his ball down to the naked eye on live TV. It kind of looked like it moved. Somebody texted me, so I rewound it. Sure enough, there you go. But I'd seen this all week, and maybe I've just become numb to it. How many players are testing the ground behind, and it's just become habit. I really don't think that it's cheating as much as just kind of the way players see other players doing it, and it's how the game's played. In fact, I'd say you see it more with tight lies than you do with lies in the rough. But this week, there was a lot of rough. We saw a lot of it, and I go back. There were years ago, Kenny Perry did it once in the rough at the Phoenix Open, and it was controversial because you couldn't see the ball. He put the club down, then you could see the ball from the rear camera view. We had this with Patrick Reed at the PGA Championship. Peter Costas called it out at the time on the air. So it's something that those who've been around the game a while see it, and they're struggling with why the players are doing this. And I hope today that John Rahm getting a two-stroke penalty after the round, handling it beautifully. He acknowledged that the ball moved. Of course, it helped that he had enough of a lead that it didn't change the outcome of the tournament. And like I said, he can be you see the temper, but there is a class to him, a sense of dignity that at his core I know is there, and he handled it beautifully. Of course, Slugger White mentioned that he handled it like a gentleman, which is also how he described Patrick Reed. Took it when the same thing happened in the sand at the Hero, and he really didn't handle it like a gentleman. But anyway, Slugger White asked John Rahm what it looked like. He gave him the penalty because under Rule 9.4, the ball moved. So forget all the high definition stuff and all that. The tour went right to that rule. Yep. Maybe John Rahm could have fought it, asking if this could be seen by the naked eye, and therefore under the rules changes that really came after Suzanne Pettersson and the U.S. Women's Open, when nobody in their right mind except a high definition camera in slow-mo replay could see some sand move, that he could have invoked that. So he did not. I believe, I have no information, no reason to know this, but I believe that Slugger and the rule staff probably use this as an opportunity to try and send a message, which needs to be sent to players that this is a bad look. We can see this on television. We have no crowds and distractions, so we're even more focused on you than ever. And there are these wonderful cameras, and we just see people always putting that club down, testing the ground, and to the point where you almost feel like they're trying to improve their lie. And it really is just such a, it's the core rule of the game, play it as it lies. And they get beautifully conditioned golf courses now. Muirfield Village was in unbelievable shape. Obviously, the greens got a little spiked up and dead looking for the reasons mentioned. And the look of ripping them up in the middle of the tournament, I just is still the strangest image of a strange week. But I do believe they're trying to say to players, take note, this is not going to be tolerated. I hope that's the case. I would love to see a memo to players. Well, I wouldn't see it, but they would send it, and then players would forward it to media members, and endorsed by the commissioner, saying, look, people love golf and love golfers and pro golfers because they see you as athletes with integrity. So please stop mashing behind the damn ball. A few other things just on the week. It's continuing to look like golf is going to be able to function. There's a great story I posted on my blog. Check out by ESPN.com that gets into the some more details about the testing process. And we had, of course, three players playing by themselves this week who continued to test positive for COVID-19. One of them, Denny McCarthy, got good news after the round. He doesn't have to be in this horrible kind of weird ostracized grouping. And I say horrible. It's a first world horrible. So you feel like all things are going well there. The only obvious loophole and bizarre thing in it was that the players are continuing to work out in the fitness trailer together in a small air conditioned room. And it makes no sense to me. I mean, I live in Los Angeles, and of course, all the people are the fitness nuts have figured out ways to work out outdoors. And obviously, when it rains, I understand. So please don't send me emails. You can't work out outdoors. More importantly, I really don't know why working out is that essential right now when your livelihood is golf. And it could be the one sport that is able to keep going. So please just get some bands and a foam roller and some things and some, and do it in your room and, or do it in the local park with your trainer 10 feet away, whatever it takes. So that said, the other story of the week, obviously, was Tiger Woods. And that's why I wanted to have Bob Harrig on. So let's take a quick break on the Shaq Show, and then I'll tell you what Bob and I are going to talk about and talk Tiger. All right, so it was great to see Tiger back. I thought he looked really great. Of course, then Thursday, he played. Sounded a little dehydrated after the round. And he's turning 45 this year. And sure enough, that next morning, Friday, didn't look so hot physically. In fact, it got a little scary at times. The feeling was, as you were watching it, like, oh no, is his back really that bad? And he just was having a bad day. Just didn't take enough turmeric and whatever it is. So he looked rusty in a lot of ways. But you go through his numbers from the week, and Bob and I will discuss this. And Bob is just such a great veteran sports writer, and he watches all things Tiger, and so I think you're going to learn some interesting things about Tiger and some things that may make you wonder kind of what he's going for with his approach sometimes. That's Tiger, not Bob Harrig. But all in all, the week was one where it's pretty clear if Tiger sits down with the incredible ShotLink numbers that are provided. And you know, I am glad ShotLink is out there. I did wonder early on in this if this was the right place and time for them to have the whole crews out there, but it seems to be working really well. And it is just amazing to have these numbers. And of course, there was a financial component too. DraftKings is just killing it with the gambling and the golf. But just in a nutshell, Tiger hit 45 of 72 greens, which was solid for the week, given how tough the greens were to hit, how windy it was a few of the days in the Memorial Tournament. And he ended up 11th in strokes gained approach the green. So the iron play is continuing to be good. 41st in stroke gains driving. You know, I saw enough moments where he had the power and he looked great when he did it. And then otherwise his swing just looked beautiful, fluid rhythm. Just Even the day that he wasn't feeling so hot, the swing to me looks solid. The short game stunk. he mentioned it, and Bob and I will talk about this. So that's clearly is the thing going into Harding Park, which I believe is where he'll next play. It's hard to see him turning up in Memphis in a hot week and then trying to regroup quickly in San Francisco in totally different conditions. And let's face it, Harding Park is a place where he should win. It's a California vibe. He doesn't necessarily love greens that have poa in them. We'll see what the greens look like and a whole bunch of other things that obviously play a role in what Tiger does on the golf course. So with that said, here is my conversation with Bob Herrig of ESPN.com. So, Bob, what'd you make of Tiger's week at Muirfield Village in the Memorial?
Well, you know, I thought he would do a little bit better than this. I thought he would show a little bit more. Obviously, Friday was tough with when your back is stiff and you're not feeling great. And that score he shot Friday was probably pretty good under those conditions. You know, in that situation, he was losing a lot of shots to the right. And when your back's bothering you, it's hard to putt and chip. So you give him a pass on that. And the Sunday conditions, you know, look, the golf course was borderline over the top. He actually scored pretty well for the conditions in the scoring average. But he's got some things he needs to work out. He even said so. His putting was not great. You know, his play on the par fives, he ended up even for the week. You know, Tiger's got to be 6-8 under on the par fives. And he's not giving himself enough chances. And also, again, I thought even on Sunday when he was swinging nicely, hitting a lot of nice tee shots, his wedge play, you know, 100, 120 yards in is just, it's mediocre.
Yeah.
You know, he's got to take advantage when he hits it that close. So, you know, when he's on a par five and he has 100 yards in, you know, he's got to be giving himself a 10, 15 footer, not dumping it in a bunker. And that seemed to happen a bunch. So now, is that rust, or you know, is that a product of the stiff back and he didn't work on it enough? Those are hard questions to answer. But you know, this is the whole point. He needed to get out there and see what he had, and now he knows what to go back and work on.
Yeah. So when you watch it, you see though overall. I mean, compared to what we saw the last time at the Genesis, where it was just nothing was really going very well. You see signs of progress, or at least he's in decent enough shape to turn up at the PGA Championship with a chance to win?
Yeah, I think there needs to be a little bit of working on the finer points. And now he swung the club pretty nicely during the final round. There was lack of speed earlier, which was a little alarming. So was that because he was just laying back and being careful, or did he just not have it? You know, those were some issues he had at Riviera because he wasn't feeling well, but those weren't issues that he had, say, you know, even at Torrey Pines or obviously in the fall. So there's some rust too. And you know, this leads back to the old, you know, argument about should he have played one of the previous events?
Yeah.
You know, would it have been good for him to get out and play a tournament where the scoring conditions were easier? He even admitted, you know, he would have liked them to have been a little bit easier. He was fine with a hard test, but this might have been too hard. And I think ultimately he's glad he made the cut and he got the two weekend rounds in.
Yeah.
But it's hard to gain much on a Sunday where you're playing so defensively the entire time.
Yeah, and he's really glad that he got in that final hole on the restart. Looking at the weather map. Back to the back, though, what struck me on Thursday evening when he gave his post-round interview, he sounded a little like you sound when it's a low 90s humid day. He sounded a little dehydrated. His voice sounded weak. And I did have a little thought like, oh, that's going to be a quick turnaround when you get to a certain age that and you haven't been playing. You've been whizzing around medalist in a cart. And even though it's hot, in your home state this time of year, it's just not the same as Muirfield Village, which is a really tough walk. It is not a easy piece of land to get around. But, yeah, I just wondered What is he, do the COVID restrictions not allow him any to bring somebody who kind of does some work on him? I mean, I know there's very limited on who can be on site, but it seems like he wasn't really prepared physically for that round the next day on Friday, where he looked off. I mean, a few times he looked like he was about to call it. It just, you know, it just didn't look comfortable at all. Is there somebody there that can help him with that?
Well, that's an interesting topic, because, you know, he hasn't been bringing a trainer with him. You know, he didn't do that all last year.
Oh.
And I don't think it's prohibited for him to do that. That person might not be allowed on site, but certainly that person could help him out away from the course.
Mm.
He had just been using the tour trainers. And I don't know to what extent that's even allowed right now. I think there's some restrictions on that. You're right. Obviously, quick turnaround to Friday morning did him no favors. That's always going to be a problem. But, you know, also, to your point about him looking a little out of sorts after that Thursday round, I think we can surmise it might have been the first time he walked 18 holes.
Yeah, I think
And if that's the case, that's, you know, that's just sort of a, I think, a misplay on his part.
Yeah.
Now, look, I get it. When he's at home, he's trying to pack as much in as he can. And when he's working on his game and you want to play, you want to get the holes in and the swings in, it's quicker to go out there and play in a golf cart. And then, you know, you're going to practice before, you're going to practice after on the range. You're out there for a long time. You are standing for a while. Obviously, he's working out and doing those things too. But I would think at some point as part of it, you just need to do the entire, somebody's carrying the bag, even if Joe doesn't come down. Joe did not go down to Florida.
Oh.
Somebody's carrying, and they've done that in the past. He did not do that this time. You know, Joe had not seen Tiger since February 16th.
No.
Before Tuesday. You know, so, but I mean, you got to go through the routine of the cadence and the waiting and standing.
Yeah.
You know, when you're hitting a shot and getting back in a cart, that there's relief on your back. When you're hitting a shot and then walking 300 yards down the fairway and then doing it again and not sitting down much, that's different. You know, and I just wondered, you know, okay, he's not used to that. And look, it has nothing to do with being in shape.
Right.
I mean, obviously Tiger's in great shape, but you can't replicate that.
No.
You know, so I think, you know, now it's going to be going back to Florida. I live in Florida. It's hot as can be. You know, is he going to want to walk around the medalist? So I think it would, I think it would help him to do it once or twice.
Yeah.
You know, it's just to get used to being on your feet and standing and not sitting down. Now, maybe he doesn't want to do that because that aggravates things, and the less he does it, the better. But that means then he needs to play more, and obviously that's a tough call at this point.
Yeah, it just seems like an odd oversight or odd bit of complacency for somebody who's usually pretty detail-oriented and knows what he needs to do. So after the round, he discussed, Amanda Baliones tried, and then some of the writers tried to find out where he's playing next, and he really didn't say. But did you read into that his next stop is Harding Park in the PGA Championship?
You know, I didn't necessarily take that as a no. You know, I thought going into this week that Memphis, the WGC, was a good possibility. Because I didn't see him playing three playoff events in a row. And I have a sense that he would really like to get to Atlanta. And in order to do that, he's got to earn some points, you know? And so if you're not going to play three playoff events in a row, why not go to the WGC where you know there's no cut?
Mm.
But after this week, I'm a little bit more negative on that idea simply because he doesn't want to overdo it the week before the PGA and have nothing. He's going to be playing in 95 degree heat going to 65 degrees.
Probably.
That's not good.
Yeah.
You know, and I think we just are seeing that playing back-to-back weeks is a risk.
Yeah.
You know, he might do it during the playoffs. He might do it at Olympia Fields and the Tour Championship, because there is an extra day before the Tour Championship. and it was going to be a day starting a day later, I could see him doing it then. But that's the only time, I think. You know, I just think now, especially going to a golf course, he doesn't know Memphis.
Right.
Yeah, I'm leaning more against, although I wouldn't be surprised if he added it. I just think it's up in the air.
Yeah. I'd vote for getting to San Francisco area early and getting back on some cool season grass golf, or stopping in at Stanford or something in the area and playing some golf around there. But he doesn't really even like to do that kind of thing anymore. He just seems to be more of a stay at home and then roll in. But it's very different than golf in Florida.
You're right. And he would be gone either way. So to your point, if he leaves early and he gets to Northern California on the weekend, obviously that, even though he's had great success out there, that that type of grass has given him fits putting at times, and it's good for him to get used to it. He certainly won't have had any practice on it for 6 months, you know. So to your point, it's a great idea, actually, if you were to take that under advisement.
Yeah, he doesn't really take that kind of advice. In fact, he probably would go the opposite way. But Hardy, I did notice he commented on the putting that he wasn't used to. He just wasn't used to the ball breaking that much. It's been a while, and the ball really was snapping at the hole. And then they had some just insane hole locations, I thought, this week. It seemed like they were different. The other thing I noticed, and I just wondered if it was his back, it's a hard question to ask. He won't answer it, I don't think, anyway. But it looked to me like he was just more upright. The putter looked very long in his hands, and I don't know if that was the back or he's just something mechanically he has to get right if he'll see himself on the replay or something tonight and go, oh wow. I don't know if you saw it. It just looked like he was standing very tall over the ball.
Yeah, that's a good point. His posture looked a little bit different, and so is that just a bad habit that he got into?
Yeah.
Because to bend over was a little more bothersome. You know, hopefully he takes a look at that and works on it. And it was good that he acknowledged that the putting was off. And look, that was a hard tournament to putt on
of the gate. It's brutal.
You know, especially the final round. You know, the greens were just ridiculously fast, and you're having some long putts. It's hard to lag them. But it did, again, it gives them, you know, some points to work on now. And that's what he really needed. I think that's what he needed out of this. And it, unfortunately for him, it was almost like coming back to a major. And he had no chance to like work out the kinks on an easier layout where you can recover better.
Yeah, well, I think it might be a positive that he saw that his game on a major style venue was exposed, especially the short game, and maybe it'll make him take things up a few notches and then obviously Harding Park is not even set up very extreme. It's just it can never get like Muirfield Village this week in terms of, I think, the number of kind of scary shots and scary putts. You mentioned though he's played well there, so you're pretty bullish though still on his prospects going to our first major championship of 2020.
Yeah, I would like to have seen more this week. I expected better. I expected him to be fine physically. I wasn't thinking there could be a physical setback. And if that happens, obviously there's no chance. You know, it's just not going to happen.
Yeah.
But when he's feeling good, like he seemed to be on Sunday in the final round, and he was hitting a lot of good tee shots, you know, he seemed fluid, he seemed loose. Yeah, absolutely. I mean, you know, he still had a good week approach shots to the hole. I mean, his stats aren't going to be great, but his stats for, you know, strokes gained approach are going to be decent.
Yeah, he was 11th. Yeah, it was a good week.
When you consider where he put himself off the tee, especially on Friday.
Yeah,
you know, that's pretty impressive. It's just more the little things. And, you know, as we were saying earlier, I find it puzzling that Tiger's better, you know, statistically from 200 yards or 180 yards than he is from 100.
Yeah.
You know, and this has been an issue for a while. You know, unless he gets his wedges dialed in, you know, you're not taking advantage of your length on short par fours or even on par fives. And you're just giving away too much when you do that. And also, he's not hitting par fives and two enough either. That's not happening very often.
Yeah.
So, he puts himself a little bit behind when that's the case.
Yeah, it'll be interesting. I would love to know if he looks at many of these numbers. But he wasn't alone in the really mediocre effort from 100, 120 down. It's just incredible how many guys are. I mean, Rory was just horrendous earlier in the week from that. Yeah, Justin Thomas, I don't think, gets enough credit for how much he differentiates himself from his peers being so good from that distance. And in part of it, I think he hits a beautiful little cut shot that lands softly with his wedges, and kind of, which is more old style. And a lot of the guys don't do that, but it's gotta be, I would love to know if Tiger pulls up those numbers or Rob McNamara pulls them up and goes, Hey boss, how about we go out to the backyard green and dial in that 110 yard shot a little bit more. Do you think he's open to that kind of conversation?
Yeah, you know, I think he is, but you know, Tiger's stubborn about other things. Like, it's interesting to me that he doesn't carry a gap wedge in this day and age. You know, there's a big disparity when you hit the ball so far between, you know, when you just have pitching wedge, sand wedge, and, or I guess it would be pitching wedge 56 degree. And 60 degree sand wedge. That's what he carries.
Yeah.
You know, and so there's some pretty big variances there between, you know, I'm guessing between the pitching wedge and what might hit a 56 degree. And so that requires, you know, honing that in and really kind of, you know, working on that and dialing it in. And that's not that easy if you're not playing all the time or if you're not practicing that all the time. And I think Tiger knows what his numbers are, and there's going to be weeks where he has that dialed in, but then there's times that he doesn't. And, the last day, the final round at Muirfield Village, I think it would be hard to hold you to a high standard on hitting it close.
Yeah.
But still, he came up short a couple times. He missed greens with a wedge, you know.
Yeah.
So that suggests something is off there.
Yeah, well, you and I argue about this when we have the opportunity in person. I just don't think he cares outside of the four majors at this point that enough to really grind. And but I think this week will be a positive in opening his eyes to what he needs to work on. And I think he will get excited at Harding Park. It'll just be even though there are no crowds, it'll be the cypress trees and the Northern Cal vibe that he knows so well. And I'm confident he'll show up there ready to go. So anyway, Bob, thank you so much. Things willing and all going well, I will see you at Harding Park. I can't wait.
Look forward to it, Jeff. Thanks.
Thank you. Let's take a brief pause from the Shack Show and hear from our sponsors. All right. Thank you again to Bob Herrick for the conversation. And it should be a fun few weeks here coming up as we lead up to a major championship in August, a PGA in August. Very normal. Just won't have any fans. And I can't wait. I'm going to be there. I'm excited about getting to be back at a tournament. Knock on wood, all things go well here. And we will see what happens in the coming weeks with golf, but and all of pro sports, really. It's a wild, wild time. I think you know the drill. The Shack Show is a production of iHeartRadio. And by the way, just a reminder that there are fantastic golf podcasts from Hank Haney, Paige Sparanik, Max Homa, Shane Bacon. So please check those out. Subscribe. Tell me anything you like, don't like about this show, and I'm excited. I have some people on a list to talk to the next few weeks. We've got the LPGA going to Inverness, so I'm going to try to reach out do some discussion around that as well. So please visit the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you listen to your favorite shows. And I'll talk to you soon. Thanks.